members, ladies and gentlemen, there's another honorable member taking calls, maybe let's continue just for opening remarks. Just welcome everybody, members here to the committee. I see a number of apologies, hoping that they'll be rectified soon. We'd like to firstly welcome also the DG and his team. Thank you very much, DG, for joining us. Well, members, we are all aware today we are getting a briefing from the Department of Health on this legislation, Medicines and Related Substance Amendment Bill. The DG will actually guide us to the presentations to be made thereof. Let's also welcome Mr. Hanif Hussein. I'm told you are now coming to represent the Independent Democrats. Am I right? Thank you very much, Hanif, Honorable Hanif Hussein. He's now going to be a member of this committee. We have, just for housekeeping, I think there's an apology from Honorable Sandy Kalyan. She's going to be joining us late. I don't know about other apologies, Ruth Anovis and others from the ANC. I'm not sure what's happening, but we'll be able to monitor that situation. Now, just for housekeeping first, do we all have the submission copies? Do we have all the package that has been distributed to all members? All members have what copies of the submissions? All members have got copies of the submissions? Okay, yes. Now let's look, before we start with the DG and this team, here's a suggested program in front of us. Do we all have the copy? Let's look at it and we must get your advice whether you agree with the program as presented. African National Congress?
Chair, in essence, I don't have a problem with the program presented before us. But I just want to check with presentation number 3 after discussion, 1, 2 after discussion, as to whether that is 1 or what, because I've already perused some of the documents and I could see that a treatment action campaign together with ALP has got a document. So I just want to know as to whether this 1 minute is meant for them or what. Oh.
Like those that are not marked, I would suppose that they'll bring their documents on their time for yours. No any administrative mistake. What is that? Okay, no, that will be sorted out. I think all the documentation is in front of us here. So what then is going to happen will be when she's going to guide us, and then we'll just use maybe the pens. Those document numbers you're going to share them. So, but I'm honorable Democratic Alliance.
Chair, my concern is, we're starting at 10 every day, and on the Wednesday we're finishing at 20 past 10. So it's 12 hours sitting here listening to submissions. And, you know, I think experience has shown that we start switching off after a while because it's information overload. And we don't give the last five or six presentations the just deserves because everybody just wants to get home, you know, and sort of brush their presentations aside. Secondly, I mean, if we can guarantee that we're going to have a quorum right until the end, that's fine. But I can tell you now there'll be like two or three of us sitting there at 10 o'clock at night listening to the last few presentations. And I'm just wondering, why is there a big rush and can we not spread it over 3 days? Why do we have to cram everything into 2 days, sitting until 10 at night, when we could do it over 3 days, or four even? Thank you.
We then will need to readjust the document preferably to finish at the 18:30 discussion on the 5th. Maybe we finish on the 18:30, and then on Wednesday we will then finish 18:30, so the document will have to, it means that we'll have to push everything down, and then that's your Wednesday. Then we must have another day, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe then Tuesday next week. Go back. So we're just stretching our times, rather than for us just to simply rush as if it's a make-believe process. Let's deal with the submissions for Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Tuesday next week, similar time, and then we have about 3 days. African National Congress.
One would not want to fall into that proposal for now, because when you look into the amendment bill and you look into submissions, indeed submissions are intense as compared to the bill itself. But when you look into the amendment, you find to it that it doesn't actually amend long clauses in the bill. It finds that it's only around the new name, around who should take over into looking into as to whether the population of the country is receiving a better health and the like. But I don't actually have a problem at all of stretching to Thursday. Thank you. Yes. The document, the Medicines and Related Substance Amendment Bill, B44-2008. Copies of the bill. Do we have copies in the back? Do we have copies? You don't have copies? There's no, yeah, there's copies at the back, they don't have? Do we all have copies?
Still housekeeping members. There's no watch here. B44. Any other one doesn't have the copies? We all have copies, honorable members. Thank you very much. Now, at least things are... DG, you'll guide us. Here's the submission from the DG to take us through the legislation itself. You'll actually guide us as to perhaps the people or the person to implement, to present technological people to assist us in this. 1 year, one day, so that at least everyone, or we suggest that we use the document in front of us in the meanwhile. Members? We can start in the meanwhile. We go to check them. Okay. So, why don't we suggest we start one out of members, if you allow me, otherwise, so that we can kill time. Not kill time in terms of rushing, kill time in terms of saving.
Can I propose on behalf of you, Chair, to start?
DG, just hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. It's a pleasure once again to be in front of the committee to present the proposed legislation. Chair, I will handle the presentation myself. My colleagues here will also assist when we deal with question time. Chair, what we've done in terms of the presentation is to actually begin by giving a bit of background and then going into the legislation itself in terms of what the amendments are, and then we spend a little bit of time, not in detail, just reflecting on some of the issues that have emerged from our consultations with stakeholders, which will be elaborated upon by their presentation as such. So that's what we intend doing. If I may begin with the second slide on the first page of your slides, which says, why the review won. Now, you will recall that we reported to the committee that the Minister of Health has appointed a task team which was led by Professor Green Thompson to actually review the MCC and the related legislation. And it's important to actually put that background because the review was done because there were complaints about the efficiencies and the outputs of the MCC itself, including the MRA, which is the Medicines Regulatory Affairs. Now, in the last presentation, we made a distinction between these two bodies to contextualize. The MCC largely is a council consisting of members appointed by the minister to act as a committee or a council. And that MCC makes decisions on a variety of matters relating to the registration and regulation of medicines and related substances. The MRA, on the other hand, is a structure in the Department of Health, which is the chief directorate there, which supports, in administrative terms, the MCC. So the MCC as such is an independent body, independent in terms of its decisions, independent of the Department of Health. But it is supported administratively by the MRA. Now, in the processes and the outputs of these two bodies, we identified that there were inefficiencies and outputs. For example, the processes of registration of medicines took longer, and the issues such as, for example, the matter of whether all products that are supposed to be regulated are regulated with regulations very clear, that also took longer. There was also disjointedness between the MCC and the MRA as an operational system. As I've already suggested, you have a situation where administratively the MRA accounts to the department, the director general, and the minister. But it supports a body that actually is independent of the two. And so there's a bit of a disjointedness in that regard. But there's also just the international trends for review of such bodies, just to make sure that they keep in line with the times and the challenges of the times and the developments in the industry. The current MCC, in fact, was conceived, as you'll see in the Act, in 1965, and it has never been reviewed in a very total sense, except for amendments here and there. Whereas scientific advances have suggested and the increasing complexity of the health products suggest that you need a body that is able to be responsive to that. For example, it's become more and more complex to actually define a medicine and a medical device and complementary medicine versus the traditional notions of Western medicines. There are also other developments in the medical field that in the medicine field that needed to be looked into. There was also a weak regulation of some of the health products. I've alluded to some of these, the medical devices, as well as perhaps at the moment, Honourable Waters will attest to the fact that he's been asking a lot of questions about when the regulations on complementary medicines are coming out, and that's another weakness in the process. So there was a need also to therefore see if we could rationalize different regulatory authorities operating in the health product arena, because different health products are actually regulated by different health bodies, different bodies. Veterinary products, you'll talk about medical devices, you'll also talk about food, and food sometimes can also be linked to to the relationship between food products and medicines is a very close one, and so those are the reasons why you had a situation where this body needed to be reviewed, and therefore proposals be made on how to actually improve it, including the consequential legislation thereof. May I then, Chair, refer members to, as part of their preparation for the public hearings and for reading that, one of the documents that are very important for that purpose is the report of the review committee, which was led by Professor Quinn Thompson. We have actually started making copies for members because it's a very thick document. It appears on our website, but we thought we would assist the members by making copies so that they are being made. At some point, the members will actually get those copies, because it's a very important. Many of the submissions will refer to that issue. They will say the report says this, and this is what has happened. So it's important for members to have that as a reference point when they are actually discussing this. Now, having established that background, Chairperson, let me summarize again what key issues came out of that report, because I start there deliberately in order to actually relate the two, as I suggest that this is likely to be what is going to happen in the public hearings and in the engagements with the public. They will relate the two. So just to take members quickly through that. What the report did was to, in principle, outline some broad proposals. And the first proposal related to structure. The review body proposed that we should establish a new South African Health Products Regulatory Authority. In other words, whereas we currently have the MCC, the Medicines Control Council, we should actually establish a new one, which is an agency, which is like the agencies of government that we have. For example, SARS is an agency, SASA is an agency, etc., etc. So the proposal was that we should move away from a committee approach to this matter, because it's actually becoming much more complex and needs a whole range of capacity. So we should establish rather a body that would be called the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority. We should be accountable to the ministry, however, be a juristic person in its own right. That body should be allowed to retain revenue from the fees and be 50% cost recovery. Currently, the MCC, just to remind members, actually runs from the budget of the Department of Health through the MRA. And the revenue that is collected from the registration of medicines is not retained in the MCC. It has to actually be deposited, like all collected revenue, into the fiscus. And therefore, the body cannot currently act independently and be able to generate its own revenue and therefore develop itself, etc., etc. So the suggestion here, perhaps to pause a bit and say that all these proposals are based there. This is about two years of work, or 2.5 years of work, which actually analyzed the bodies like this elsewhere in the world, the best of these bodies, etc., etc., and suggested what actually gives them capacity. So the 50% cost recovery suggests that the body must be able to fund itself at least 50%, and the other 50% would come from the fiscus. For a start, eventually, depending on the maturity, it would move to just self-sustainability as such. Well, this issue of the body needing to have a flexible remuneration structure so as to be able to recruit and retain skills is actually quite critical and fundamental to this proposal. Currently, the MCC relies on expertise that is actually commissioned by the MRA from the various structures, scientific structures that exist, universities, research councils, and so on. And the problem with that model is that you cannot really hold these experts who are giving you this service accountable for the time frames that you would want to have in an organization like that, because it depends on their availability. If they are busy with other things, then they are busy with other things. Whereas if you begin to actually build your own capacity, and again this comes from the experience of all the leading medicines councils in the world, all of them tend to have the majority of the people who are working in these issues in the expert field to determine, for example, quality, safety, and efficacy. In other words, we are going to be able to review all the documentation and ensure that they analyze the clinical trials and look at everything else. Those people are employed in-house. Now, in the current structures of the public service, you wouldn't be able to get that expertise if you didn't have that proposal of a flexible remuneration structure. So that was the one proposal. Flexible, in other words, can deviate from the public service structure. Then it should be run on business principles and ensure good governance. Should be headed by a CEO who would be the accounting officer, subject, of course, to the PFMA. So in other words, you would not have an MRA in the Department of Health that would actually be supporting this body. The body would be self-supportive, run by a CEO or a head of that body. You could actually use any other designation. At the moment, they used it to the CEO. And then, again, a key principle that this body, next slide, should actually be an overarching regulatory authority for all health products, which would include medicines, medical devices, foods, and cosmetics. Now, you'll see that this actually follows the models of other regulated bodies of this nature. Prominent among these would be bodies like the FDA, the Food and Drug Authority of the U.S., which actually looks at all these aspects, medicine, medical devices, food, and cosmetics. Currently, our food regulation is actually dispersed all over. You will see the municipalities have some municipal bylaws that deal with the regulation of food, for example, meat and so on, in the abattoirs. You will see that the Department of Agriculture also also has the kind of regulatory authority. So if you can track down what happens to meat, you'll find that one authority, if it is coming from the farm and is being loaded into the truck, there's one authority to regulate that. Once it's on the road in a certain province, the provincial authorities are actually responsible for regulating that. Once it reaches an abattoir, then another authority would be responsible. When it is now in checkers or in some butchery, then another authority is responsible just for that. So it's all those kinds of things that were being rationalized into this structure. So that's the suggestion, that all health products for humans and animals, and the emphasis here is on health products. And it must also regulate animal health products with medicinal claims or medical contents, which is, of course, again, another global trend. So in the animal products, it should actually be those that have medicinal claims. And you can see that the key here is that all these products should relate to those that have medicinal claims, that make particular claims or medicine contents. So it's not necessarily trying to take on everything. Now this is really a structural representation of the body. This is not a proposal for how the structure would go, but it's actually trying to illustrate this, what I've just said, that you would have a section that deals with medicines, and you have another one dealing with cosmetics, another one with foods and medical devices. And even within those sections, you would have different subsections, you know. For example, on medicines, you can have the human medicines, you can have animal medicines, and within the human medicines, you can have the African traditional medicines, complementary medicines, you would have a section that is looking at clinical science, surveillance, etc., etc. So this is just a graphic representation of the possibilities of a structure of this nature. But the principle is that it should actually be a body that is able to regulate all these under one roof, so that the relationships and the interconnectedness between them is actually kept at check all the time. Because you, for example, what a chicken is fed is likely to impact on the people who eat that chicken. So you have to be able to clearly regulate what kinds of medicines or products with medicinal claims are going to be used in feeding or in treating chicken, in order to be able to ensure that there's no crossover to human beings. That's the advances we're talking about nowadays, that these things are actually creating that problem. So there you are. It's just an illustration. The next slide would then begin to talk about principles that would govern such a body. It should be based on good governance, effective management, project management, accountability, transparency and good communication, and continued for professional development, monitoring and evaluation, enhanced review capacity, etc., etc., etc. I don't want to actually waste the members' time just going through each one of these things. In principle, what it means is that it should be a body that is run on business principles, such as good governance, transparency, all those issues that we all know about. So I will skip that and move to slide 11, where we would begin to say, what would be the functions then of this body? Let me go back to 10 first years. It would be to evaluate medicines, medical devices, and other health products for efficacy, safety, and quality, including evaluating blood-derived products used for medicinal purposes, certify all the above for efficacy, safety, and quality, and authorize the conduct of clinical trials, both human and animal. In other words, it would actually be the body that would give authority to clinical trials, conduct post-marketing surveillance and pharmacovigilance. Now, this is a very important area, in fact, which is still very weak in South Africa. It's there, but it's very weak. Pharmacovigilance. You will see this particularly in the area of HIV and AIDS, where because people are using the medicines for a lifetime, it's very, very critical to have a strong pharmacovigilance component, so that you can be able to know what is happening to those people and what adverse effects are emerging from that, and be able to respond to them. You will note that from time to time, on the food side, shops with very strong vigilance on post-marketing surveillance will be able to withdraw a product like a yogurt because there is a problem with that yogurt. And they will say Woolworths has withdrawn in all their chains lactogen or yogurt or what have you. That's the kind of thing you also need with medicines in particular, more so with medicines. The kind of sense of, yes, we said it was good, it was efficacious, but in practice it's actually having these results and therefore it must be withdrawn or this, that, and the other. So that's what we're talking about by post-marketing surveillance and pharmacovigilance. It should be able to keep a register, that's okay, conduct inspections when it's necessary. For example, that's very important because the people that produce these medicines must always keep the highest manufacturing standards and must always keep good clinical practices. So from time to time you must be able to inspect the sites. We know this in the area of condoms, where last year we had a problem. This year, in fact, early we had a problem of the quality of the condoms that were actually being distributed, because they were no longer adhering to the standards that were actually approved for. So you need that kind of follow up from time to time when it comes to these things, more so with medicine. So, and then it would license manufacturers, wholesalers, and distributors. And of course, the proposals also talked about the relationships, concurrence of the Minister of Agriculture on the registration of veterinary medicines. So in other words, on the registration side, there should be a relationship between agriculture and this body and the Ministry of Health, and corporations and agreements with other selected foreign regulatory authorities, whatever kind of agreement. And it should have an agency function for others. For example, it could be asked by a particular country to actually act as its agency in terms of the registration of its medicines, especially in the context of Africa where the capacities may not be there. Relationships with other regulatory authorities, etc., etc. And you also have strong relationships with law enforcement agencies, local and foreign. That's to deal with illicit medicines and all those counterfeit medicines and other issues that are related to that. And of course, the relationship with the patent office for patenting, IP, information sharing. So these are important relationships that would have to be established, including other government departments like science and technology, etc., etc. The argument was that if you had this kind of arrangement, you would then enhance the capacity of the system. You would also ensure good governance. You would ensure the improvement in the systems. You would ensure timeous access to new technologies. You would ensure quality staff, etc., etc. And you would also ensure transparency and accountability, which is difficult in the current environment. In the leading agencies like this one in the world, they are able to say to you, from the day you make a submission of your product, they are able to say to you, it will take 9 months or 18 months to process this. And they are able to say to you, now we're on week 3. Or you can actually follow up in the process as to where it is now and what are the issues, what are the delays, etc., etc. And therefore, they are even able to say, if we don't finish it within 18 months, then there will be a penalty clause. Those are the transparency issues that come in into this kind of arrangement. Therefore, improved timescales, etc., etc. Well, you see, those are the key issues that this committee recommended, which we then had to translate into the legislation. But there are certain things, before I come to that, there are other issues that arose as a result of this work that this committee looked at. For example, this was a proposal around ensuring that all those products with medicinal claims, as well as medicines in them, should be regulated. However, the body or the committee did actually feel that perhaps it was high time for South Africa to actually think about a broader body that would look at safer products that are used by the public, broadly speaking. The SABS, for example, is the body that quality assures a whole range of products that we use. But it's not compulsory for people to actually go to the SABS. You don't have to have gone to the SABS for your product to, that's the South African Bureau of Standards, for your product to actually be regulated, whether it's toys for children or stuff like that. Now, this issue of safety of products in general that are used in South Africa, whether it's your iron or your electrical products or what have you and so on, that issue is quite a critical issue, but it was not the brief of this body. So they just suggested that, look, that issue must be looked into. And then, of course, the enforcement of a code of good marketing practice. It's a very important issue. It's already started being worked. Now, Chair, anybody that actually is appointed by the minister on behalf of government to make proposals to government does make its proposals. But it does not necessarily follow that the government will take every proposal that is made by that body, because then government has to consider the proposals in relation to what other issues arise as a result of that. So I'm saying this in order to again say to the members that there is an attempt in the proposals that we engaged with ourselves to try and go line by line in relation to what the proposal of the committee were and whether they've been translated as is into legislation. And therefore, I'll also try and show where the deviation is and why that deviation from the committee's point of view. Of course, it's an important issue that will arise in the discussion. So, I've just summarized these issues, and now all these issues have led to the amendments that were made to the Medicines and Related Substances Amendment Bill. Now, that bill establishes a full-time South African Health Products Regulatory Authority. Now, you'll remember that was the proposal, whose mandate will be to evaluate the safety, quality, and efficacy of medicines and other health products and certify them accordingly. Now, that's critical. That was the proposal, that we must establish an agency, a body. We've gone the route of establishing an agency rather than another type of SOE, a state-owned enterprise, in the form of ESCOM, for example, in the form of Telkom, for example. And the main reason for that, one of the main reasons for that, is that this kind of body would still need to be supported by government in terms of its fiscals. 50%, as you said, is 50% revenue retention and self-sustainability. But in other words, for a start, government would have to actually put some money into it from the fiscals. Now, that's very clear that for that to happen through a transfer process, you would have to have a body that is an agency rather than a fully-fledged SOE. In the form of SARS, for example, in the form of SASA, the South African Social Security Agency that we have already. So one of the critical issues is that one, that for a start, you would have to actually have this body being located within government and accountable to the ministry as such, but as an independent body, and I'm going to come to the independence part of it. Once medicines have been certified as being safe, good quality, the application is then referred to the minister, who shall register such medicines if it is in the public interest to register such medicines. Now, there comes the real issue. That's why we start with it. And I can see Honorable Waters is already commenting on that issue. We have made a distinction in the legislation between science and what scientists can and should do, which is to actually do the science and pronounce on science. They will say, this medicine you've got here is good quality medicine, it's efficacious for human beings, and it's very safe. It's efficacious for what it says it can do. It will cure your headache, and it's safe. That's science. Now, those scientists do not have a scientific basis. I want to underline this one. They do not have a scientific basis for saying, this medicine, therefore, can be sold in South Africa. That's a different process. It's registered in South Africa and can be registered and therefore sold in South Africa. That's a different process. So, once again, let me underline that one, that the certification of the medicine as being efficacious, safe for human consumption, and a quality medicine is a process of science, independent of anybody. The current act, which we have now, before amendment, talked about the same issue. It said efficacy, safety, and quality, and then added another element, which was called public interest. Now, when it came to that, the current MCC simply ignored that because they were not really competent to do that, especially in relation to other aspects of public interest other than the fact that this medicine is of quality, safe, and efficacious. Now, we are saying, let's separate the two. The process of registration of medicine should actually be a political process and not simply a process of what the scientists say about its efficacy and so on. And I'm going to come to those details. But the main reason for that, let me just give an example, because that is an issue that is going to be debated, so we'll be able to elaborate some other time. But let me give an example. South Africa says we want to ensure that we grow our local industry in pharmaceuticals. It's a very critical area. Now, if we want to grow our local industry and capacity in a competitive environment where, in fact, other countries have a capacity to support their pharmaceutical industry to other forms such as subsidization, etc., etc., your own pharmaceutical industry cannot actually grow very easily if it will compete with the products from these other countries, India, Brazil, etc., etc. So you have to have an element of an ability to be able to say, yes, this is a very good product, quality, efficacious, but for this particular market, because we are actually trying to grow a similar product and we want to promote the similar product here, we wouldn't want to have this product coming in and competing with ours. You have to have that ability to make those industrial policy decisions. That's what happens in the U.S. That's what happens in Australia. That's what happens in the U.K. In some of these, they talk about price. They use price as an issue. Let me take the example of the U.K., The body NICE, in fact, they are extending its mandate now. NICE is actually responsible for advising government as to whether that product can actually be put into the list for marketing in the U.S. within the national, in the U.K. within the national health system on the basis of a balance between price and efficacy. So that body will actually advise the minister that this particular thing can be registered in the UK. You can't just go and register medicine in the UK, regardless of whether it's good, efficacious, or quality, etc., etc. So this is not something strange and new, I want to emphasize. We can debate a lot of mechanisms, but that's the idea. Thirdly, the bill also provides for the authority to look at safety of foodstuffs, cosmetics, as we suggested, all these other elements that we talked about. And then in terms of the structural arrangement, specifically the bill provides for the appointment of by the minister of the CEO of the authority responsible, reporting and responsible to the Minister of Health. It's like the accounting officer. This particular individual will be the accounting officer for the authority, and then will be able, therefore, to appoint all the other staff that is supposed to be appointed. So, in other words, the bill does not say you shall appoint 500 staff members, and you shall appoint them in this area, and this is the kind of expertise they would have. It simply provides for the head, who shall be a CEO appointed by the minister. The structural arrangements that come after that are matters of organization. They are not matters of law. The bill also provides for the certification of medicines, medical devices, as I've said, and then the registration thereof by the minister if it's in the public interest to do so. Now, if you look at that clause, it actually says what defines, in a way, what public interest would be in broad terms. The registration of veterinary medicines and other animal health products will be done in concurrence with the Minister of Agriculture. I've already talked about that. And then there will be appeals against the decisions of the authority. Such appeals shall be heard by an appeal committee convened by the CEO. Currently, there is an appeal committee that is actually established by the MCC itself. And such an appeal committee shall also include persons nominated by the appellant, so that the appellant may also say, I'd like so-and-so to sit in the appeal committee. And appeals against the decisions of the minister, in other words, in terms of registration, are not provided for in this bill, because there's always a process of appealing against the ministers, the ministerial decision, executive decisions. You may approach the courts, you may look at other possibilities in relation to these matters. So we haven't provided for that in the bill. The next slide would then, the following slide simply explain what clauses, that's just for reference, what the clauses seek to do. For example, in the definitions, there's a new definition of advertisement to also cover other products, to provide for the definition of authority, certification, foodstuffs, and products. Those are concepts that are new, whereas before it said medicines, because we are now moving beyond medicines and medical substances to products, which are broader than that, so it will say products where it's actually saying that. And then the other clauses are giving effect to all these other sections, the CEO, staff authority, and they will repeal certain sections. Next slide. Right up to clause 35. Clause 43. I'm just skipping those, but members can refer to them in terms of what clause 40 tries to do and what we're trying to do. I mean, that would be just getting into the details. Now, Chair, I do want to say, before I then go to the last four slides, I just want to say that the bill, therefore, gives effect to some of the proposals that were made by the committee, but it deviates where we felt it was necessary to deviate. For example, it does deviate on this issue of registration by making a split between the certification and the registration process. Secondly, it does not establish totally an independent body in the sense that it would be seen as the SOE, ESCOM, Telcom, accountable, yes, to the ministry, but totally independent in terms of its operations with its own board. It doesn't do that, and I've explained why, and one of the reasons, mainly for now, is in fact that it still needs to be supported. It can't be. If we move completely to that kind of autonomy, then the registration fees for South Africa would immediately have to move, tenfold. It's very cheap to register medicine in South Africa at the moment compared to the other authorities that actually we're trying to compare ourselves with. So that issue, that's where there's a slight deviation. And of course there are other very smaller deviations with regard to the proposals. But by and large, the proposals that came from this group were actually taken. Now, consultation. We published this bill for comment, a month later we received 32 submissions that we studied very, very carefully, and we also met with all the role players that had made submissions to us on the bill. Those that had made submissions to us on the bill, we met them one by one and engaged with them on their submissions. They actually presented them to us, and we met with them, and they engaged with us on their submissions. By and large, they supported the creation of the authority. But there is a lot of comment, as I say, on this issue of the separation between certification and registration, which we tried to explain, and of course you'll see it in your submissions that if people are still not convinced about it, then they'll make a presentation on that issue. But many of the details that people were calling for, other than that issue, which was actually the part that was much more of a controversial issue. Many of the issues are about detail. For example, people say, but you don't give, but the committee said you must actually have a body that reduces the timelines for registration. Now, we say those kinds of details cannot be in law. They are a matter of regulation and a matter of operation. So many of the details that people come with to say, for example, what you should have said this, that, or the other, are details that we have argued, are details of regulation rather than details of law. For example, how are you going to make your submissions? Is it going to be electronic or not electronic? You can't actually put that in law and say all submissions must be electronic. Because if you do that, then you would have to come back to Parliament and say, I want to change now, there's a new advanced thing, and it's no longer electronics, it's biotonics. So let's amend the law to say all submissions must be biotonic. I'm not so sure. So there are details like that in the submissions that we saw. For example, as I've alluded to the request that time frames for registration be in the Act, for example, and there was also issues such as seeking clarity of definitions, and key among them was the issue of making a distinction between product and the health product, and those kinds of issues in the process here would have to be clarified. We were able to say that we would clarify those issues. This issue of the controlling board for the authority, I've already alluded to it, to say there are submissions that are arguing that this must be controlled by an independent board. In other words, it must be like an agency that is separate, run by an independent board. Partly because the argument here is that the CEO, it appears that we are saying the CEO is the authority that will decide the registration. And they are arguing that a board must be registered, the certification, the board must do that, the CEO must manage the operations and then report to somebody. We are arguing that this can be dealt with in terms of a panel of experts that will still be consulted on a whole range of matters as an advisory panel of experts. We do have those kinds of things. For example, if you take the STATS SA laws, the Statistician General is accountable for the statistics and the work they do to a council, the Statistics Council of South Africa, but accountable for the administration and the operations to the Minister of Finance. So the Statistician General will go to the Statistics Council and say, these are the statistics and this is methodology, and they approve it as a council. He's not allowed to go to the Minister of Finance and say, these are the statistics and this is the methodology. In fact, the Minister of Finance doesn't even know what statistics is going to produce. He's not allowed to know that by law. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about here, just by way of example. People would like to have things like conflict of interest for those in the employ of the authority in the legislation. We don't believe so. Skills of the CEO, they say you must define the kind of person by law who must be appointed in this body. We don't believe so. We say sometimes there's a phase where you want somebody who actually merely knows how to actually establish structures and make them work. And after 5 years, you say, no, this structure is now working. I'm looking for somebody now who has expertise in this area and that area. You can't legislate those kinds of things because they evolve in terms of the organizational needs. So many of the details that they've actually talked about are issues of detail that would be covered in regulations in our view. And then there are issues that relate to pricing. They say something about the pricing issues, and we believe that currently that's a separate process. You know, there's a process of the pricing committee to determine price, and we're dealing with those issues. So this body is not about pricing. It's simply about the science of medicines and medical products. That's what it is about. It's not about, okay, now what are the market issues? What's the price? And how do you expand the market, access, and all those issues? Those are issues separate from the scientists that simply declare this medicine is of quality, is efficacious, and is safe for human consumption. Now, the cross-referencing with other prescripts, of course, in relation to what other prescripts say, will be considered where these apply. The one issue that actually becomes very critical in relation to the comments that we have here, we've got the issue of regulations, as I've suggested, that actually will give effect to all these particular issues, etc., etc. So at the end of the day, our belief, from engaging with the stakeholders, our belief is that there are not many controversial issues with regard to this bill. But that's our perception. It may change when you listen to... There are not many. The ones that are there may be the main issues, but they are not many in number. Let me put it that way. The ones that are there may be substantive, but they're not many. Okay. That's the bill as it stands, and that's the work we've done in relation to engaging stakeholders. We've outlined what issues arise from our understanding with regard to the stakeholders. We also want to emphasize that even the issue that actually people are taking as the main controversial issue has happened in South Africa. It's not new. It happens now in the veterinary field, and there was a reason why it happened. It happened because of the kind of issues that were of public interest. The fact that when people began to use some hormones into the feed of animals and related matters, it became very, very important for the Ministry of Agriculture to be able to deal with that issue and separate the availability of these medicines and related substances in our market from whether they actually are used elsewhere as such. So there you are. We've tried to be comprehensive enough to assist the committee.
Thank you very much, DG, for your input. Members, here's the report or presentation. We will request you to ask questions. This is meant rather to assist us to be ready, I think, is it next week? For next week, submissions and discussions and deliberations. Shall I open it to yourselves? We also have our state law advisor at the back, Ntombi. And Ntombi Mnikiso, she's our state law advisor. So we're well protected when there are certain legal challenges. Thank you very much, Toby, for joining us. So, members, we request questions or comments or matters of clarity. Thank you very much, Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation.
There are some issues which did not come out very clear here, especially when the fact that we need, it is quite understandable that we need, instead of consultants, there should be in-house staff. But we are currently having problems of getting qualified people to run that our very own departments, and this seems to be a very high-tech agency that is to be established. How long do you think it will take you to get that stuff, and what will be in place in the meantime? And another issue that came up is when the DG kept referring to checking in the supermarket and other stuff related and cosmetic issues. It reminded me of the bill we passed some time ago, the food, cosmetics and disinfectant bill, of which we are still awaiting for the regulations. I wonder how far it has been referred to and what duplications and consultations have been done with that act, because we might be facing two separate, one independent act operating within a new structure. And I think I'll stop this, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to talk about two points in particular, which I'm sure the DG will know, the powers of the minister and the independence of the new structure. Now, in my mind, I think that the new structure should be viciously independent from the department, and I use the word viciously on purpose, given the past history that we had with Vara Dean and the political influence we had when the MCC stopped the clinical trials in the past. I think it proves why the new structure needs to be independent, totally from the Department of Health and away from any political interference. You said that they couldn't do that because of funding constraints, but I mean, ESCOM, who you say is a SOE, if I've got the acronym correct, is receiving 60 billion rands of state funding over the next, I think, 2 or 3 years, if I'm correct. So that, you know, that doesn't wash with me. The fact is, we could have a viciously independent structure with funding from government, which could be phased out, you know, over 2, 3, 4 years, whatever the case may be. So that doesn't, I don't think that argument holds any water from yourself. Then as far as the minister having the sole authority, I take it, without consulting anyone, she could, or whoever the minister is, because this probably will only happen after the election, whoever the new minister is, has the sole discretion of saying whether a medicine or whatever, drug or whatever, can be registered or not. I mean, I find that bizarre in the least. You talked about the fact that we don't want competition from Indian companies. You used them as an example. But to me, the more competition we have in any market, the cheaper products become. It's when you start protecting companies that they can actually start charging a lot more for products. And that actually goes against the general gist of the department when trying to bring the cost of medicine down. So to me, more competition means cheaper prices. But also you said the UK, US and Australia have the same system. And if I heard you correctly, you mentioned the NHS in the UK, but I think you mentioned a body. I think you did, I'm not quite sure. A body giving advice to the minister. And was that only for NHS drugs or also for the private sector? This is a difference as well. And how does it work in Australia and the US? You didn't explain that either. I mean, is it exactly the same or the variants? And if there are variants, can we please know? Because you gave the impression that it's exactly the same as what you're proposing here. Then, so that's those two questions. And just briefly on staffing and the backlog. An honourable member mentioned the lack of skills, and it is a very specialised field. I mean, what staff are we talking about? You haven't indicated to us how many scientists or whatever we need in the new structure. Right, and also, by what dates are you setting deadlines for when the backlog, which you heard about last term, when it came before the committee, are you setting deadlines for when the backlog has to be addressed? because I think they're 98% behind on the registration of medicines. That's what they told us last month. So, you know, can we have some clarity on that matter? Thank you.
Thank you very much. One would start by welcoming this presentation from the department. Indeed, it has been a very good presentation, preparing one into or for a battlefield. I should think it's much more informative. And secondly, one would appreciate the fact that the department is saying it's going to give us the report, actually. Maybe we can get that report before we leave this house today. My questions will be around the following. It will be based actually on the National Health Act. For instance, Section 36 of the Act speaks of certificates of needs. Now I just want to know, will this restructuring have an impact on this clause? Any impact, either positive or negative impact, if there's any? And secondly, how will the restructuring impact on pharmaceutical companies? That is my second question. And my last question will be on Chapter 12 of National Health Act, Chairperson, vis-a-vis Section 4 of the amendment. For instance, DG, you told us that this authority will operate as an agency. Maybe I need to be corrected if I've put my words wrongly there. You said it will operate as an agency. I just want to know as to whether it will not conflict with Section 91 of the National Health Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may start with the first issue of staff, one of the reasons we referred to currently as the problems we have with recruiting staff, that is largely currently we're dealing with pharmacists, basically, mainly in the MRA, and perhaps the latest relates, of course, to the public service remuneration packages. That's why, for example, we are currently reviewing the packages for professionals in the public service. We started with the nurses. This year, we're about to finish the process with regard to doctors, dentists, and pharmacists, and so on. And then we'll move to allied professions the following year. But nevertheless, here you are talking about expertise that even more higher than that in some instances. You're talking about quality researchers that would actually be able to understand the environment of clinical trials from set up the chemical formulations that are involved in this whole thing. That is why, in one way, you say you're not creating a branch of the Department of Health. You're creating an agency that would have flexible remuneration structures so that it is able to pay, to recruit and pay the people market value packages to compete with the best in the world. So that one of the reasons why we took that route was indeed because we can't think that this kind of area will improve without being able to pay the people what the market value would be. So we believe that will actually attract from all over the world the expertise that we need. But it will also create a kind of career path from our own people, who would see value in actually going in this direction. Even restructuring our pharmacy faculties and curriculum, because at the moment it produces a whole range of retail pharmacies. and as such, the pharmacy element of the pharmacist is actually becoming much more combinational. You know, they would have a sense of how to combine certain things and how to package them. This one would actually stretch it a little bit further. So we believe that this is to address exactly the problem that we have currently, that even with this, with the requirements we have of just a small group of pharmacists who have problems. So the flexibility in remuneration is actually meant for that. How we deal with the current situation before we move to that level, I've suggested that we are currently looking at the issue of remuneration of professionals, the OSD, to apply also to people who are employed in this area. So, but we are also looking at other means of recruitment. So indeed, that's an issue that is being addressed by creating certain agency with flexible remuneration possibilities. Food and cosmetic bill, I would have to leave that to our colleagues here. Now, this issue of power versus independence, as well as the sole authority and so on, let me just say about three things about it. One is, if you do a scan of the bodies we have in the world, you will find that in the leading countries of the world that are actually doing this, the UK, or let's say the US, Australia, and even in the UK for that matter, all these bodies are government bodies. You will find them. For example, the Secretary of State of the U.S. is responsible for the FDA. It's a government body. The Food and Drug Authority is it. And there's a reason also for that. The Food and Drug Authority deals with biosafety. Of course, because the U.S. is actually very much conscious of the issues of bioterrorism and other forms of terrorism. That body is under the direct supervision of the Secretary of State for Health. It's a government body. It's not independent as people would want to make us believe. That's not true. The Australian body is a similar body. It's not independent at all of government. It's a government institution. The UK is a quasi kind of government institution also. The way I'm talking about it. So, indeed, let's establish that fact without talking about historical issues precisely because of what happened with Virodin. Let's talk principles. Why are bodies of this nature having to be seen as part of government? It's because they are dealing with very serious issues which governments get accountable for. Once anything goes wrong within them, the efficacy of medicines, the safety of those medicines, government liability is very huge when it comes to these kinds of issues. That's the first issue that we need to. If we compare with the best in the world, there are reasons why there is that relationship that is being kept. That's number one. Number two is it's always not true that because we say minister shall register, that means that's the sole authority without consulting anyone. I mean, there are processes which have to be outlined with regard to how a minister would actually register or not register a product. If you look at this act, it talks about the issues of public interest here. I have to find the clause. But if you look at it, the clause that actually outlines sub-issues that the minister would have to look into in relation to that matter, you'll find it there. And once you outline those things, all other administrative instruments that actually are there in South Africa kick in, because that's an administrative justice issue. So there are issues that actually kick in. You don't just, because you have a power in the South African context, then you exercise it willy-nilly. There are other instruments that guide how ministers exercise their power. And I'm sure the Honourable Member would know those. The issue of more competition, maybe it may be an issue of perspective, I'm not sure. But currently, if you look at the issues, we are developing some strategic industrial policies, and I'm just using that as an example, which actually begins to say that we must actually do certain things in our own industry, and pharmaceuticals are one of the three strategic areas that we say will take South Africa out of the challenges of unemployment and all other issues that are related to that. But apart from that industrial policy, we also have other legislation that talks about, for example, BEE companies, support for our own internal policies. These are policies that are there, that actually require some kind of mechanisms for us to ensure. So, yes, competition, I agree, but competition within some reasonableness. You know, we have to be able to say, we also have to look at the interest of our own country. Competition without that interest, otherwise we wouldn't be in the World Trade Organization negotiating so strongly right now. We would simply say, okay, they want us to open our market, let's open our market. But they won't open their market. That's why there's been such a problem in the WTO negotiations. It's because people see what happens when you actually say, let's have just an open market. In fact, some people argue that there are issues that are related to, for example, the Chinese textile issues that have been discussed in this country, their impact and what we do in relation to that. So it's not just a willy-nilly open market that actually we are working under. And I don't believe it would be so in the near future, because there are issues of national interest here. With regard to the current backlogs, I mean, of course, it has nothing to do with the legislation here, but of course, the issue of the NCC and the current backlogs is precisely the point that even if you wanted to intervene right now, for example, I can't go to the NCC and say you have a backlog, please push that backlog, except to appeal. And they can't go to these experts and say, you must finish that thing or else. They can't. Because if the expert says, I'm still busy with other things that I'm doing, you can take it if you like. Then there's a problem, because then that's the only expertise they have at the moment to actually deal with this matter. So it's very difficult for us to account, even ourselves, for the time frames that the NCC is actually using currently. We can't say, well, we can ensure this 98% backlog, if it is there, that it will be eliminated within 2 years. We really can't. The MCC itself, as the chairperson last time advised, that the committee would call the chairperson and the members of the MCC to come forward. I would think that they would actually make an undertaking to try their best. But it's not them. They can make the quick decisions. But what happens when this thing goes to the experts is another matter. Now, with regard to the matters that relate to the National Health Act, I want to assure the Honourable Member that this particular body would not necessarily conflict or have an impact on Section 36 and even Section 12 and the other sections that have been quoted. So the Certificate of Need issue, in fact, which is still an issue that has not been promulgated at the moment in the National Health Act, precisely because of the complexities and the judgment that we waited for, and then we wanted to ensure that it is in line with that judgment. It actually largely determines where the need would be for pharmaceutical companies, for pharmacies, for all those people to open their practices. But that may be a next step. They would have to have the medicines to distribute, and the medicines would have to have been registered by this body. And therefore, the processes of registration, they may impact on business in terms of how how people do business and whether they will do business. But there's a larger issue that will impact on these things. The larger issue would be, what form of the national health insurance do we have? And that's the debate that is still coming. Because that will have a real impact on these issues that we're discussing, particularly the size of the private sector, etc., etc., etc. So that would have a impact on the certificate of need, etc., etc. But this one wouldn't be that much. With regard to the pharmaceutical companies, they would say, as they said to us, that they want transparency. So they would want us to unpack what are the things that would be taken into consideration by the minister in this public interest issue, so that they can prepare themselves for that too. That's what they are concerned about. They would say, we know how to prepare for efficacy, safety, and quality. We also want to know how to prepare for ensuring that the minister does register. And so what are the elements, what are the criteria that he or she will use so that we can actually meet them ahead of time as we make our submissions. So that would be the impact. They would want to actually expand. The second one is, once this body is operational and they have to pay as more or less market-related prices for registration, which they are willing to do, provided the efficiencies are also going to be responsive to that, they would be very pleased. Because for them, you'll be able to guarantee now that they can say, if they submit their product today, they know it will be registered in 2 years or 1 year, and they can actually influence that. There are also transparent processes where they can also note where it is in the chain, because this body would be able to do such things. So it would actually improve their lot very much. So that's why they support this particular bill in general, as I say. That's why they would support it in general. So it's because that impact on them would be much more guaranteed, except they would want, as I say, for us to unpack even more what is this criteria that would be used by the Minister for Registration. My own sense really is that it's more by exception than by rule, this registration story. Incidentally, the one issue we didn't really address here is the fact that there is a need, and I think it's actually provided for, or we're going to provide for it, for a kind of grandfather clause, transitional arrangement clause, that assures them. I think they wanted to be assured that what is already registered will actually be transferred to this body as registered, so that they don't have to start afresh and re-register everything. That's one issue that they are interested in. Thank you, Chair. I hope we can just answer one question on the food and cosmetic bill. My sense is, anybody wants?
Thank you, Chair. As far as I know, that the regulations were issued in terms of the Foodstuff Cosmetic Act. There are regulations in place. What has happened now, since the Act has been amended, the Directorate dealing with a specific Act is now reviewing the existing regulations for the purposes of bringing it now in line with the new legislation.
But therefore, the relationship with this is that the regulation is actually of a different kind. It's only those aspects that are making medicinal claims that would come into this. Yeah.
Rabinovich, thank you very much. I hope you have given you the documentation. Thanks. Now, you see, now I think we'll have to come back at some point. I'm not satisfied with this, you know, comment on the foodstuff and cosmetic legislation. I'm not really convinced what you're saying. Honestly, I'm very frank with you. Because as far as I know, we will need to understand you are defining foodstuffs here. Means foodstuff is defined with medicinal claims is made, where medicinal claim is made. And the question here is, what is the relationship between what this bill will be seeking to do
versus what that legislation was seeking to do. And we'll have to come back and deal with this thing. I don't think we could be answered that way, honestly. Honorable Sbuyana, we'll come back to this question of the powers of the minister. Again, that one I'm not convinced at all. I'll explain myself, maybe support when members have made their views.
Thank you, Chair. The question of skills and the availability of well-capacitated people to run the structure has been answered, I think. But my concern as a layman and as a person who is looking after the interest of deserving people is that we seem to create many structures which need quite a lot of funding, whereas the fund that goes to the needy people is very, very limited. How is the department going to acquire funds for this structure? And the other thing, of course, I'll go back to the powers of, as we have stated, the powers of the minister with the same independent or semi-independent structures. Will the minister have enough powers to question the accountability and also question or fix responsibility in cases where there is misconduct and other related issues? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I thought there was another question. Okay. There is another question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. I just want to understand the two stages of certification and registration. I just want to understand whether, during the certification process, are you expected to pay a fee so that you can get a certificate to the authority, and then you register, the minister do the registration. Are you also expected to pay another fee? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to understand this regulation issue where we refer to international maybe, let me say, imported issues, maybe medicine versus our local medicine. When we import those, the medicine, which regulation stands? Are we going to adjust everything according to our own situation, or is it a regulation as it stands from their patent laws from wherever they are? I don't know whether I'm clear, but I know what I want to say, but I'm not very clear how to present.
Thank you, Chair. As always, I apologize for being late. You know my problem from Gauteng. But if you want to rule me out of order because this has been covered, please go ahead. This is very different from the SAMRA bill, which came into effect a few years ago, regulate medicines and medical devices, because that had definitions for complementary medicines. And your introductory comments here, you talk about products, to regulate products including. That seems very vague. Can you tell me how you differentiate between foodstuffs, very high concentration, vitamins, nutraceuticals, bioidentical hormones, health, actual medicines, it's all very well not to say that you don't want to make claims, but what you do about very high vitamin D3, for example, 2,000 units of vitamin D3, do you just regard that as a food? And how are you dealing with the whole complementary health matter? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may start with the issues of the funds for the structure and say to the Honourable Member two things. One is we are already funding the structure through the fact that we have a directorate, or the chief directorate I referred to, the MRA. We are not expecting that the funds that would resource the structure would actually be more than, except in terms of the adjustments during the budget process. Because we are saying this body must also work on a cost recovery basis. So in other words, they would have to charge fees, higher fees, than they are charging now for the registration of medicines. Currently, I think my colleagues will help me, they charge not more than 70,000, around 20 in some instances and so on. For some medicines that in some countries you'll be charged 200,000-300,000 to register. So there is a very big difference between the two. So, and I'm saying the industry would be willing to pay more if they are going to get the efficiency gains that I outlined. So it won't necessarily impact on yet another structure with, you know, funding that needs to be budgeted for in very big terms. It's not that kind of structure. It's a structure that is self-financing in a way from now on, as we suggested. Now, with regard to the issues of the minister in responsibility for discipline, corruption, that's the oversight role that the minister would have to play on the administration side to look at whether those people, you know, who are employed there, just like the oversight role the Minister of Social Development plays on SASA and SARS with the Minister of Finance, etc., similar agencies. So there would be that oversight role in relation to those issues of discipline. There's only one fee that would be paid to the body that will do this work, scientific work that is actually there. That would be the certification fee. You wouldn't pay a separate fee for registration, not as envisaged at the moment. It would be just a fee for the process. And of course, although it's actually outlined as two stages, as if they follow one another, they can and should actually happen parallel to one another. In other words, it's not meant to say you will certify this first before I decide whether I'm going to register it. The processes can go parallel, you know, in terms of the investigations that can be involved in this. The issue of Honourable Mashiko, that if I understand very well, what happens currently and what would happen here, what happens currently is that this body, regardless of whether you have a medicine registered by another body anywhere in the world, you would have to make a submission here if you want to register here, and they will go through their processes thoroughly without necessarily saying because you are registered, they will register you here. What this bill says is that, and it also happens now, is that it doesn't prevent this body from entering into some agreements with other countries, other bodies of a similar nature. Now, those agreements may range from simply the fact that I can use your information. We can share information, you know. If you've evaluated this document, maybe I don't have to go through the whole process of data evaluation again. Let me check yours and evaluate yours. Those kinds of agreements are possible. That's what this law allows. But it doesn't say at the moment that there's an automatic there's an automatic kind of sense. If FDA has registered it, then you must just automatically register it in South Africa. It doesn't, or certify it, and it doesn't work that way. But it allows for an agreement between this body and FDA or the Australian one, et cetera, et cetera. So it does allow for that. This issue that is being raised by Honorable Robinovitz is actually an issue that is there currently anyway. The complexities that you are referring to are there currently. This is merely to create a structure that goes beyond just medicine and medical devices. That's why we would then say health products, including food, with a medicinal claim, and other health-related products. The body would actually be responsible for regulating all that, which is what it does currently with the medicinal, with medicines and related substances. Now, when do you determine that this is a medicine or is making medicinal claims? And that's a matter that the regulations would have to further clarify. Because it's very difficult to actually legislate for every possibility. Tomorrow you may have a different kind of device that people use, which has a medicine in it, which you would not be able to accommodate with any definition that you put in a law. You have to actually say, as long as the parameters are within this that we can interpret, the body will have to interpret. And that is allowed here. Medicinal claims, medicines or medicinal claims. And there are quite a number of complexities. Let's take an X-ray machine. It's regulated by the radiation authority because it's got radiation issues. Doesn't have medicine. It works in a health product. That's a product which is not regulated by this body. But your vitamins, currently, our food section actually determines whether this is a food. If it is a food, it must have so many milligrams and so on, as you are outlining. Beyond it, then it has to be registered. That's why in the rat case recently, there was a finding by the court that apart from the medicinal claims that were made around it, therefore they should have been registered. There are other related issues like the ones that you are talking about, which is the quantities involved, which in fact would have disqualified it as a food, even in the current environment. So that issue is still an ongoing issue, which in fact is not an issue that you can legislate on. You can allow experts to actually determine where the perimeters are. And in future, they may change those perimeters. They may say, now for human consumption, maybe 200 milligrams of vitamin A is fine now, whereas before it was 150 milligrams. That's science and scientific development. So this law doesn't actually attempt to make those definitions or distinctions. Because then what would happen, then they need to take everything and say, whether it's food substances, complementary medicines are still going to be medicines as long as they are medicines. They're still part of this. So that's what we could say now, Chair. Conrad.
Thank you. Okay, I'm not convinced because you say it requires time, but there have been more than 10 years invested in this, and Professor Green Thompson has done a huge research into the inputs of people, and there was a very big and costly ministerial task team set up to establish parameters for these differentiations. And if we're going to the trouble of, you know, restructuring the body so that it becomes more efficient, isn't it also important that we make some clear frameworks about the limits between and the categories? I don't think it's very difficult to differentiate devices, which are machines and which people don't eat, and products which people consume, and there was a lot of discussion about, Professor Rees was involved as well, I think you remember when she was a chairperson, about the definition of complementary medicine. So why have we scrapped all of that? I don't understand it. Because now, combined, can one just state the concern one has? You've got this body, it's charging lots of money, okay. It may decide what it charges for ethical medicines and generic medicines. And then here comes the minister with the power to decree anything, finally maybe registered, and over the years decide anything may be priced at any level. So some medicines, which the minister may like the idea of, and we've got a history of this, so unfortunately one's got to quote these examples, will be regarded as foods or products not requiring registration and go through without any cost or with very low cost. It's just so loose. If we're trying to get efficiency and accountability, why not make these issues clear, have a framework within which things can be tackled? Yes, and just on that score, Professor Green-Thompson, you wrote what I believe is a very exhaustive report on this whole issue. Is that incorporated in this legislation?
I think we are debating two different issues, and maybe it's related to the fact that the honourable member came a bit late. Let me just step back a bit. The report that the honourable member is referring to, I started with and said this is what it recommended. Recommended an agency, a single authority that covers all these things, as long as they make medicinal claims, whether it's complementary medicines, food with medicinal claims, etc., etc., as long as it's medicinal claims. What the report doesn't do, in fact, is to begin to say, how do you draw a line between a food which does not make medicinal claims and a food that makes medicinal claims? It doesn't do that. And that's what I'm saying you can't do in law. You have to simply say that you enable research and analysis to actually decide those factors as time develops. But once it's actually agreed that this is a medicine, complementary or what, a food that makes a medicinal claim, then it has to be registered. It has to be certified. Therefore, it will go through the same processes as defined by this body, that all complementary medicines, all medicines and all foodstuffs with complementary medicines and all medical devices would have to go through. So what I was actually trying to say is that currently, that even in the current environment, the issue of complementary medicines and the fact that it's taken 10 years to come with regulations for the registration of complementary medicines, that's okay. But it doesn't take away from the fact that this body will still continue to actually be responsible for registration of complementary medicine. The regulations around that are coming out now for the current body. So we are making a distinction. Here we are establishing a new agency that will take over all these responsibilities. What the current agency has done and when it will produce the regulations in that regard is a separate question. And we can answer it by saying that MCC has finished that process, is about to hand over to the minister the regulations for the registration of complementary medicine. And once it determines that, the minister will not say you can't register complementary medicine, because the law will say this makes medicinal claims and therefore it must be registered. So we'll have to certify it for efficacy, quality and so on. The minister doesn't come in then. The minister only comes in the process as legislated now, in the process of whether that should be registered in this market, not whether it should actually be certified or not made available to the public. That's an issue of this agency. So you cannot really sell a complementary medicine in South Africa if it is not certified by this body as being efficacious, safe, and so on. So those are different issues, really. this body would still have the same responsibility as this one, but more, in fact.
The DG mentioned previously that he mentioned Dr. Roth's case in particular, and that's a clear example of what's the political interference by politicians in the MCC for not taking any action against him in the first place, and the fact that the TAC had to go to court to get the law enforced. And that's another clear example of why we should have an independent body, totally independent. But I'd like to ask the author of the report, the professor, the DG, if you don't mind, Chair, if I can ask the author. The DG mentioned two points that where your report is different to what's being recommended. The first is that the minister has the ultimate say of what medicines get registered and don't. And if you could just maybe brief the committee what your report says and what maybe you think as the author of the report that the minister has these powers. And secondly, about the independence of the MCC, what does your report actually say as far as they're concerned? Are you agreeing that there should be an agency or should there be a COE, a state-owned enterprise? Thank you.
I'll be very fair. I mean, I'm not sure. Did you get the copy of the report? It's quite a very thick report. If it's a very good point, our reporter is raising, that maybe we needed the DG, I think, in the slides, one of the slides he presented to us. It does allude to the findings of the report itself. It does, I'm sure, one of those slides. Perhaps, I'm not sure now, in terms of the time we will be having next week, if we want to be wiser in terms of the, shall I say, for lack of a better word, the synopsis of the Professor Craig Thompson's ministerial task team's report, maybe just a few page presentation perhaps to next week, just before our discussions, and then maybe interact with it. But I would assume it wouldn't diverge from what is actually being presented by the DG. But let's give him the time to do that. The matter at hand that we are all discussing, and I'm sure perhaps it's a matter, I think, as the DG says, it's a matter all of us will have to look into. But I think it's going to be the crux of what we are actually going to be deliberating on ourselves here, the question of the role of the CEO and the MCC, or rather the authority, versus the role of the minister. Given the history that you outlined yourself, that the efficiencies of the current body has actually been going down on almost over years. If the report Mandisa Yela was bringing last time, in 2003, the registration was 31%, going down 53%, 80%, 98%. The efficiencies were going down. And yet now, for us to improve the efficiencies, we are putting another tier. And I'm not sure how this new tier is going to improve. No one actually is explaining to us here. Furthermore, when you are dissatisfied with this level of the minister, there's no other recourse except the courts. All of us here know that, shall I say, for lack of a better word, the inefficiencies of the courts. Your matter can be held in 5 years' time. So there's no convincing argument that far presented as to this role of the minister to register a medicine that has been found by a body of wise scientists, efficacy, the safety, and the quality of a medicine. And all of a sudden, we're putting another body now of a minister who's not a scientist to determine a scientific finding of a body. There's no convincing argument. Because the minister is not a scientist. Now, the minister must therefore say, on, what is this word used? Not in the interest of national, in the what? Eh? For public interest, I may decide to register or not to register this particular medicine. That's what is being presented here. It's raised here. And this public interest is not defined. No way of patient for this. There's no definition of this public interest. And of course, that's a very nebulous thing to deal with, especially medicine, in terms of the public interest. It's not defined. So I'm saying that this for me, this becomes quite and of course, it can be subjective. Public interest can be subjective, determined by the particular ideological political leadership at a given political time in history. So it's difficult. This is a matter that we ourselves will have to interact with quite carefully as members here, and because we want to put things that will sustain posterity. So I think maybe, I'm not sure, Honorable, what else you will agree perhaps with the chairperson to say, maybe it's a matter that we will have to look into very carefully. Maybe it would be wiser, I don't know, maybe what the submissions are saying. I've even had time to look into the submissions in terms of this this particular view. So maybe I don't know, maybe for now, maybe honorable members, let's leave it and allow maybe the better wisdom to come from how many submissions we have. I can't remember the number. Quite a huge submissions already were suggested. Now we must extend even the days of public submissions. Will be wise that those people will be coming from different perspectives. And I can't think, for the love of me, to think there will be no one mentioning this particular aspect. DJ?
Sir, thank you very much. I agree with it, sir. That's why I raised the issue, because it's going to be the real, real main debate in this committee. I just want to assist the members by referring them to the relevant clause in the legislation. Just so that we can see that it begins to try and define this issue. It's on page 6 of the legislation. It's clause 7, it's clause 15D, it's clause 7 as such. That's on page 6. And that's D, line 15. It says, in determining whether it is in the public interest to register a product, the minister shall take the following into account. And then it begins to look at the issues: economic interest in relation to health policies, public health interest, including national epidemiological trends, whether the product is supportive of the national health policy and goals in the long term, whether the product is likely to significantly improve access to healthcare, blah, 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 blah. I'm simply saying there is an attempt to begin to unpack that, whether that's adequate or not, or is it actually helping the chair. If we're referring to the clause, it's that clause that's the main issue, starting from the beginning, where it talks about application for certification, right up to where to D, and just to mention that we still insist here that anywhere in the world, all over the world, this is not just a scientific issue. And the ministers, governments, don't question the science. They're talking about other issues of economic interest. It's not science. It's not whether this is efficacious, quality, or safety. And it's done all over the world. But let's leave that to future debates.
Yeah, I wanted to try and assist with this issue around of public interest. But just to say, firstly, I spent 4 years in the Australian regulatory authority, where I was responsible for the registration of medicines as part of the economic assessment that's referred to here. And to give you an example, in the Australian system, we had to report to the Minister of Health, although they call the Secretary for Health. So they have another political name, but effectively that's what they do. And to give you an example of that, we had assessed Viagra in Australia, because Pfizer had applied for Viagra to be accessible to the Australian public. And we had found that Viagra was not in the public interest, because it was not in the interest of the public at that time to spend their funds on the purchasing of Viagra when there were other pressing issues that the public fund should be used for. The industry, Pfizer, then took that issue to court, and challenged the decision of the minister who chose not to, to allow Viagra to be sold in the market, and found in favor of the government, because it was not in the public interest, to be using funds for this drug as opposed to other pressing epidemiological issues. And we will use the economic argument and other issues. So these issues are not peculiar to South Africa, and there's international precedence for them on several others that one could give you examples of.
To insist, we'll have to come back. I'm not convinced. There's nothing in me that convinces me now. I mean, there may be that view from the Australian government about what Viagra, but I would think from another perspective. Just think of a man who's impotent and needs this stimulation to help him psychologically and to feel himself. And you are saying it's not in the public interest. There's no way for me. I mean, even that one is a problem. But we will go through this thing, but as I sit here, I'm personally not convinced that you need a minister to approve the registration of a medicine. The policy issues, political guidance and accountability measures as defined in law, public management, management, public finance management, etc., one would agree. But you register medicine here as a scientist, the minister must go and approve. We'll debate it, we'll find time, it will be wiser maybe as the submissions are coming. But that's why I'm saying, maybe you're going to give us all those examples of, I mean, even the FDA. I mean, we'll have to go into it. At least that's one point or most of us are familiar with. Or even the EU, I think, which is even a cross-cutting body for the world. European has got a lot of capacity, of course, unlike even other bodies, because they use capacities of the entirety of Europe, basically. But we'll have to come back to this particular issue. But, and I see the hands are insisting on this one, but we are debating something we're still going to be, how can I put it? Oh, I know she's got this.
A warning note, you might think I defend the FDA, but I think in this instance we must look to better examples, because that is one of the worst examples, they say, of political manipulation in the world is the drug industry in the United States of America. So much as an America file, I think let's look to broader issues. Let's spread our focus. And that would be an interesting comparative evaluation.
I just wanted to say from the example of the, Australia, yeah, the drug. The fact is there was a team advising the minister. He said, in this instance, there isn't. It's a minister on her own going through these subsections, 1 to 6, deciding on herself, deciding by herself. Big difference. Anyway, but we'll discuss it.
We're not drafting a legislation for today. We're drafting it, this one is 1965. So 40, how many years now? We're now amending it. So let's not look at it, because otherwise we'll fall into the subjective analysis of a problem, and then we'll be okay. But I was just saying that maybe DG, maybe your team will assist us. I want to come back to the point Honor Mashiach was raising on the legislation on foodstuff and cosmetics versus the definition of medicine. Because there must be a way of looking into this particular aspect. As I was saying that you will have to, as Honor Mashiach was saying, how does this bill relate to the foodstuff and cosmetics and foodstuff legislation? And especially with regards to the question of the definition of a medicine, and also there's a clause, this clause that was dealing with certification and registration. Again, I'm reading some problems in that particular clause, and we only define certification. Am I right? We only define certification and not registration. And for a layman like me, sometimes those things can interchangeably have the same meaning. But we're only defining that one, those two, as with regards in particular to the efficiencies thereof. Because we were discussing this bill with a particular history. And that's always going to ring in our background. And I think we as legislators want to ensure that the product will be more efficient, will be ensuring that people don't wait for long to submit their proposals in the product for registration. They're waiting for Godot. We can't really accept such a thing. And I think it's our collective responsibility to do those things. So we'll have also to look at that. Also, maybe the other thing that I don't see here, in other situations like your ESCOM example you are making, and I think your Telkom, they are both, the agency and the board. But here it's just the agency, and there's no other relation that is playing. Yeah? Oh, what? Oh, okay. Maybe you'll help us. Maybe next week when maybe the prof maybe we can allow maybe in our program next week, just the prof to give us an overview more on what you have presented in your submission here, and then just to, so that we let the writer to say that this report of yours was also accessible to the industry. So they may make reference to it.
They will.
Chair, the report is on the departmental website.
No, Chair, they do. Because, for example, if you look at the second submission of the TAC, it does exactly that. It says, this is what the report says, you've deviated from it. Yes. The legislation deviates from the report. That's what... If you read this, the second submission, it says exactly that. And it analyzes clause by clause. What the report says and what the law says. That's why I made that.
So
I was making the point, Chair, that any recommendation from any committee is a recommendation. You can take it or you don't take it, and you give reasons why you don't take it. So we've given reasons why certain things we've not taken, whether they are satisfactory or not, the committee will decide. Yes, that's why I was outlining, for example, where they say make a totally independent body like an SOE, I gave reasons why we didn't move that reason, which is why you don't have a board. It's like SASA, for example. There was a reason why there was a proposal to have a board of SASA, the South African Social Security Agency. There was a proposal to have a board. But if you go to that legislation, you don't have a board because it's accountable, and there are reasons for that. So that's what I was making as a distinction between moving willy-nilly to the Telkom situation.
Just, I think we've got an overview, a sense of the direction and the bill itself. I think let's find time to read the submissions. Let's find time to familiarize ourselves with the clauses here in this bill. As I'm saying, that there are some of them that crop up as we're going to interact with these things here. And we're meeting when? Tuesday, public hearings. The program is in front of you. Agreed to? Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, State Law Advisor. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. She says the figure large. She knows the attitude of the committee to figure large. Honorable Rabinovich is going to kill us. But let's eat it for today. Thank you very much.